Hello, everybody, and welcome to our INE Office Hours call for the month of March 2018. I was going to say 17. These are the calls where you get to come in from whatever program you're currently enrolled in, whether it's IRSPT, whether it's CMDS, or whether it's a full NEPT program. Lots of alphabet soup there, hey? So we are here to just answer your questions, go over cases, go over labs, whatever it is that you feel like you need. For some of you who are new to IRSPT, insulin resistance practitioner training, welcome. If this is your first call, you haven't maybe really dug into the materials left, and we haven't actually officially kicked off the new program, which is going to happen next Tuesday, Wednesday, the 28th of March will be our kickoff call for that. But you, this is kind of a bonus call because you get 5 of these monthly calls and you are able to come and use them as you want to. And because you know, there's a little overlap there. And when we signed up and when we officially started, some of you who signed up early got these extra ones, the 6th one. So I am really, really looking forward to supporting you today. I know that a couple of people put in some labs, but I don't see them on the call. So here's the thing. If you upload files like a client lab, your own lab, something that you want us to review on the call, then I require that you're on the phone speaking because there's a lot of back and forth to make that pretty dynamic and to make it effective. So I see Mona just came on. Perfect. So yeah, so if ever you want us to review labs on this, I need you to be on the call so I can ask you questions. Now, we usually don't have screen share available here. This platform is going to be adding screen share very soon, probably over the summer. But it helps to see labs. So what I'm trying to think if there's a way that we can do this. Lynn may have an idea. We might be able to pull it up on a Zoom link. I usually don't use Zoom for these because there could be more than my limit on Zoom. Zoom only allows me to have 100. But I can – let me think about that for a minute, and maybe I can get some advice from Lynn on how to do that. Otherwise, I'll just pull them up. I'll look through them, and I'll answer your questions about them. That might be the better way to do it. We do these on our NEPT calls because it's a smaller group in general. And then we share the labs and we share the screens, so it makes it really helpful to do that. But we'll do it. We'll figure it out. So let me look to see who is on. I'm going to go check my chat. Looks like Annette's there. Yes, and you guys can see me, hear me. Not see me, but hear me. There's Tom from Asheville. There's Annette and Cynthia. Okay, so the way that you ask questions for this is either in the chat or in the Q&A. If there's a lot of people on it, I sometimes miss things on the chat because there's a lot of back and forth and not all of them are questions. So if you have something that's a specific question addressed to me, you should see a little Q&A box next to that. And I see Hughie put in a question. Yes. All right. So I see a question from Hughie. This was before the start of the event, and I would like someone on my team to follow up with her because it says, I did the pretest for Module 2, and the results came back graded at 60% with the information that I failed the Module test. What's up with that? Please clarify. Generally, we don't – those are not – you know, the pretests are basically for your own reference. So, Lynn, if you can check into that and find out if – They're usually not graded, but there may be something with the software that gives it a grade. But that grade doesn't count. It just means that, wow, great, you already know 60% of what you need to know from that module. Well, maybe not because it's a short test, but that you've got a good handle on some of the material already. So that's basically it. The pretests don't count for IRSPT or CMDS or even for NEPT. The pretests are just for you to get a sense of what do you need to be focusing on in there. So if the wording needs to be changed, we'll look into it and I'll assign that to Lynn to make a note of that. You can go into the question and answer and you'll be able to see that. Thank you, Lynn. We have on the chat, Janet just joined. Yay. Tom from Asheville. Great. Cynthia. Oh, Cynthia had a question. Cynthia says, do I have concerns about bacterial microbial infection with multiple fingerprinting for sweet spot, et cetera? I keep thinking I need to put on gloves when I do the dishes, in particular after multiple pricks. I personally don't. I am not a germ phobic. I have been poking my fingers hundreds of times, sometimes in a day. And I don't, but if you are concerned, then you can certainly take precaution. It's a tiny little hole that you're creating. It closes up right away. It's like if you have an open wound, like I just cut my finger with a knife the other day and I have an open wound on my finger and I still don't put gloves on. But if you feel like that's something you need to do, then by all means, go ahead and do it. I personally don't think it's an issue. Yeah, just feel out your clients. If you have, she says, I'm not germ phobic either, but was curious asking for clients. I would not be concerned about it. If they are concerned, you can afterwards just have them do a little, alcohol or, hydrogen peroxide or something like that on it. But I'm not concerned with that. It looks like Brandon just joined and Regina just joined and Susan D just joined. Yeah. All right. So Mona put in some labs. So I'm going to open up Mona's lines and find out in particular, I think it was an organic acid test. I'm going to find out in particular what questions or comments or what you need help with. So hi, Mona.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful.
Good.
So I sent Shay's organic oat test along with her labs. I wanted to make sure that you didn't see anything that just really jumped out at you. With the organic oat test, after talking with the doctor at the laboratory, I currently have her on Biocidin.
Okay, before you go too far, this is your daughter, right? The one we talked about before,
yes.
Who was having the funny stuff in her gut. Got it. And then I want to look to see, because it has your name as the client on there, so I just want to make sure you sent the right one. It says physician Mona, patient Mona. Oh, Moria. Okay. No, Mona. It looks like the same. So I just want to make sure
you should have gotten two. Did you not get Shay's?
Let me look.
It said it was
Lynn handles this for me. I don't do all this file stuff. I get too confused with it. So Mona. Nope, I only see Mona organic acid.
You only see mine? Okay.
Yeah,
whenever I get home, I'll send hers in a little while.
I'll ask Lynn to check to see. Maybe she missed it or maybe it just didn't upload when you did it.
Okay.
Lynn, I'm going to open the
there. It's actually there. When you look at, when you open the Dropbox, there's one that says Mona M and one that says Shay G.
Oh, that's not what's showing on mine. Did you put a period in the name?
Nope, I did not. Definitely
Made sure. Oh, wait, it just showed up now. It just showed up minutes ago.
Technology, it's crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
Shay,
she is separate. Oh, God, I see it. I thought it was a different person. I see it. I didn't realize it was your. Okay, good. Got it. Okay. I already opened those up.
I was prepared
for you. I just didn't realize. All right, so we have the organic acids. She's way off the charts on arabinose. Way off the charts. That's a part of the bacterial. There's the first page in an organic acid test, for those who haven't seen, gives us markers of the toxins produced by a variety of bugs, basically, that can live in the gut. So it's one of the yeast and fungal markers is arabinose. So that says that there's definitely a very high level of yeast in her system. So she's definitely got a yeast overgrowth. The other candy. The other markers were fine. She's also got, in terms of the bacterial markers, the one that's really out of range. There's one that's slightly out of range, which is the hydroxyhippuric. But the hydroxybenzoate is pretty high. So she's got some bacterial and yeast overgrowth. Hard to say exactly, you know, when you don't do a stool culture and test them, you don't know exactly which of the antimicrobials and, you know, kind of beneficial flora, et cetera, that would counteract them. But I would say looking into that, you might start with getting her on some kind of probiotics and antimicrobials. So tell me about her probiotic status. Does she do probiotics at this point?
I have been doing massive amounts of probiotics for so very long. And, I mean, obviously I'm just not doing enough, or we just continue to, you know, I even wonder, have you seen, you know, she's on anti-seizure medication. Have you seen that anything like that disrupts the ability for the body to utilize probiotics?
Most likely it affects everything because those medications are strong. I'd have to know exactly the medication. And the way to look it up would be to go to drugs. I think it's drugs.com and look up the specific medication and look up for interactions and side effects, et cetera. Because it could affect the absorption, right? I'm not a walking encyclopedia of all the medications. I mean, they change so much. Even the ones I used to know, I don't anymore. But I always look at drugs.com for that information. And you can get a lot of information there about what that drug is doing. I like to look at mechanisms that a specific drug works on, because that sometimes helps me to see how it's going to affect the different body systems and what nutrients. Some of them will list, these are known herbs and nutrients that this particular drug interferes with. There's interactions between other medications. So that's the best thing to do. But I would say that having, you know, being on medication for, well, first of all, seizures, she's got seizures. So that says that there's a primary imbalance in her body, right? And the brain and the gut are so closely tied together that it's important to really look at some of those connections.
Right. And the 4-creosol showed up very high, but interestingly enough, I think I sent you the lab on the C. diff and the stool cultures that the doctor did. It showed negative for all of them.
Yeah, so that's the thing about the stool cultures, right? They are a good thing to do to try to get specific, but they don't always pick things up. I mean, think about it, right? You've got this colon full of stool, and you are basically doing 3 days in a row you're taking stuff, but it can be hiding. And I would say that if there's a buildup of a toxin that's known to be produced by a specific organism, I would tend to be trusting the organic acid test. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah. Now, there's a particular set of probiotics that Great Plains, who you did this through, recommends for the C. diff. And it was, I just drew a blank on it.
The Culturelle?
Culturelle, yeah. Have you had her on that?
I do not. My concern is, see, I'm a little confused with the probiotics because I know that the D-lactate-free is important because of some of the possible bacteria that we don't even know about at this point. And I wasn't sure if the Culturelle was D-lactate-free or not.
I don't know for a fact that it is, and it may not say it, even if it is, so I would look at it. If it's got lactobacillus acidophilus, it's not D-lactate-free, because that's a big lactate former. So that's an easy way to tell. Let's look it up real quick. But sometimes you just have to try things, right? If it makes her worse. The problem with her,
you know, that's why she's so tricky, because she doesn't have, you know, a voice to tell me what works and what's not working. We just kind of have to go by her body language.
You just got to go by, yeah. Yeah, that's
and
what's
so,
tough.
Yeah, it's real, that's why, I mean, lab tests are important for her, whereas other people you can get feedback from.
Right, Right. But the point, what I'm trying to make is that we have a lot of quote-unquote rules, right, about, well, if they have a SIBO problem going on, make sure it's a D-lactate-free. But if there's specific organisms that are growing there that you want to get rid of, you may have to counteract that. I mean, there's just a lot of that going on. I'm trying to find it here. I went to the Culturel site and of products. Okay. All right. Oh, they have so many now. They used to just have one.
and I haven't looked at them, so I didn't realize they had a whole bunch either.
Okay, let me look. I'm looking at their okay, why isn't it? It says click the image to zoom in on the label, but it doesn't say anywhere. I don't. Here we go. Okay, yeah, it's Lactobacillus GG. It's got inulin. It's also got other crap in it. Man, I don't know about that. All right.
See, that's what you run into.
I know. It's really challenging.
I had mentioned one to Mona yesterday, a company, and it looked fairly clean. It's called SpectrumCeutical, and they have D-lactate-free as well. So I was going to find out a little bit more about them. They are in Australia. So
okay. And they specifically say that they're good for C. diff infections? That's what we're looking for. Something
right,
that's the
exactly.
Culturel. I don't know if it's the Lactobacillus GG. And is
this was for the Saccharomyces boulardii and then the staphylococcus. That was what she was looking for at the time as well, along with the D-lactate.
Looks like it's rhamnosus is the one. Rhamnosus, and that is D-lactic acid free. Right. All right, so let's keep that in the back of the mind. There's some specific antifungal stuff that might be helpful. Now, tell me about her. Can she swallow capsules?
No, but she has a G-tube. So anything that I can crush or open, I can open it and put it in water.
Put it up in the G-tube. Okay.
Yeah, so that actually makes that part easy.
That part is easy, right? You don't have to worry about. Do you feed her through the G-tube? Do you give her any probiotic-containing foods, or have you just been doing it with –
Yeah, I've just been doing it. And then I'm working on making my own kefir-type stuff because if I can do that and use whatever probiotic I'm using,
that's right.
Then I can bump that up tremendously.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm just trying to make sure I'm using, I'm worried that I'm not using the right probiotics at this point. Because like I said, I've been using probiotics on her, for forever. But
What are you using?
Well, I'm using right now. I got the from Garden of Life. The raw has all of the different strains that say it's good for the C. diff. So we've actually been using that one. But I'm thinking that I'm still not using enough because I'm only using one tablet twice a day. But they're a really high count.
Well, what's high count though? I mean, in cases like this, we're looking at therapeutically 400. Billion a day for several days, like 7 days in a row, to try to really restore some balance.
Okay.
Should I
do that while I'm doing the biocidin as well? Or should I do the biocidin first and then do that?
I would alternate it different times a day because you really want to be replenishing the good flora. Because if you're just killing stuff off, you're going to kill off some of the good flora with the biocidin.
Okay.
Right. So I would do alternate times, empty stomach for your probiotics.
Okay.
And then I would do any other times for the biocidin. So maybe you would do first thing in the morning, last thing at night for the probiotics, and then middle of the day for the biocidin.
Okay.
or with meals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's got a lot of mitochondrial stuff going on.
Yes, I know. I see that.
And
so what's your suggestion for any of that?
Well, you know, how long has she had the G-tube? Is this like her whole life?
She's had a G-tube since she was about 9. But, I mean, we feed her by mouth.
You do?
She can't eat. Uh-huh.
So what's the purpose
that
of
that? That was put in, well, whenever she was very small, she had a DNS installed to help with seizure control. And,
yeah,
unfortunately, the doctor put it in backwards.
Oh,
so
no.
I have no idea if it really would have worked for her or not, but the polarity is wrong. And we had to turn it off because she went into failure to thrive. She wouldn't eat. She wouldn't drink. She wouldn't laugh. We turned off the VNS, and then she kind of came back. But we needed, nutrition at the time because she was doing nothing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's turned out to be a blessing because there's been several times that she's been really sick, and we were able to maintain what she needed by just using the G-tube. So. And we hydrate her a lot through that also.
And you've got her, she's had seizures since she was a small child, or was there any incident that triggered that?
Yeah. No, they came on, like, early on with Rett syndrome. About the age of 3 is when they really talk about regression and things of that nature. And we saw weird things with her when she was a baby. Like, if you startled her when she would wake up, she had a majorly exaggerated startle reflex. And she would just shake all over. And I'm still not so sure that some of what we saw originally was seizures, but what she has now is definitely seizures without a doubt. So,
and they're brain
mal? That's not a big deal.
How often does she have?
It just depends. It depends on what's going on. Like, say, if she's going to, like right now, it's time for her to start her period. So I can expect that she's going to have more now. Anytime she has to be on any kind of antibiotics. When I first started the biocidin, they kicked back up again. So I think that's just like being on an antibiotic. Everything's trying to die off and everything gets out of sync.
Right.
And we were doing really, really good. She was taking CBD oil, and she was going anywhere from 9 to 12 days without taking them. I mean, without having them. And then all of a sudden, they just kicked back up again. And then they were like every other day, sometimes even every day.
Oh, boy.
So,
oh, my.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place because I'm definitely trying to take her off of the medication.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it slowly. And I, thank goodness, my regular family physician is on board. He said, why not? How do we know if it's helping at all?
Right.
So,
right. She's still
that
having
being said, I'm just going very slowly.
Yeah. Did you go slowly with the biocidin?
I started out slow with the biocidin, but then I kicked it up, you know, kicked it on up there. Right now she's doing 5 drops 3 times a day, which is what he told me to do.
Now, when you said you started slowly, was that triggering the seizures, or could you tell? Because that's the thing, is you want the least effective, the minimum effective dose.
Well, I mean, you know, with the seizures, we don't really know for sure exactly what causes them. I mean, like I said, sometimes they're frequent, sometimes they're not.
Yeah, but you did say that you noticed, even when you started the biocidin, that they increased.
I did.
Okay.
She seems to be leveled off a little bit right now, a little bit more than she was.
Yeah, so I would just see, what I was trying to get to was, if you started slowly, did the seizures increase when you first started or once you hit a certain dose?
Yeah, and I didn't pay that much attention to that.
Okay. So these are some really important things, especially with a situation that's so challenging like this. But even with anybody, we want to be adding things very slowly, but monitoring. And the only reason for increasing is you let people stabilize, especially super sensitive. You have them stabilize for a few days. Okay, that seems good. Now I'll increase it a little bit. But if you go too fast, then you don't know. You know, maybe she would have been fine on 3 drops 5 times a day, and that wouldn't have triggered the seizures to increase. So that's the stuff to really monitor. And I know this is challenging, and you've got so much going on here. But those are ways that you could certainly help the situation.
Okay.
So if you're still seeing that there's an increase in seizures, then I would back it off. I would back it off to say 3 drops 3 times a day.
Okay.
Okay, and just see how that goes. If there's a, if you see it less, the seizures, it's pretty critical to stop the seizures, right? That's a pretty traumatic situation to be in, and scary as all heck.
I did a minor cocktail with her probably about 2 weeks ago, and right after we did the Myers cocktail, she did have a seizure that day, but then it seemed that she went several days without seizure. So that was interesting.
Interesting. Well, that would make sense because the Myers cocktail is high in the B vitamins, and with all this Krebs cycle, yes, what to do? She needs B vitamins. I mean, we can look at them specifically, but they're all high, which means that that whole pathway, so protein, you know, amino acids and your B vitamins, especially niacin and riboflavin, are critical in the Krebs cycle. There's a lot of nutrients that are needed in there. So interesting that you said that her seizures seemed to dissipate a little bit once you had the Myers cocktail.
I'm going to try to do the Myers cocktail about every 2 weeks. That's about all I can afford at the moment with everything else I'm doing with her.
But in the meantime, if you can get yourself some easy-to-digest liquid Bs to get into the G-tube, or even to take orally, but I would get them right into the G-tube, that's going to help a lot. If you look at the picture, there's a picture, so that those of you don't see my screen, of course, none of you do, but if you look at the Krebs, they don't have a Krebs cycle picture in here, do they?
No, they have the neurological one.
They have the neuro one. There's a really cool, you know, you can find them. We have them in NEPT in our practitioner portal. Our second module is all about the Krebs cycle, but there's, if you look at the Krebs cycle, just do a Google search on Krebs cycle and then images. And there's some good ones out there by some of the labs. I think I know Genova probably has one that you can look at and you can see the various substrates. But because so many of them, if she had just has high succinate, and everything else was fine, I'd be really looking at why is the succinate high? What is the enzyme and the cofactors that take succinate to the next intermediate? And then see what might be out of balance. But if you look all of these up, you're going to see that there's a bunch of nutrients that she's low in, and that can be doing this to her mitochondria.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take just a little bit of looking and research. So she's got a lot of those. She's got a little bit high oxalates. It's not, you know, tremendously over, but oxalates seem to be a little bit high.
Well, and I'm giving her from New Beginnings, I'm giving her the chews with her meal, which is calcium and magnesium. But the other day, we were looking at her urine, and I had it in a hat, and I dumped it out, and oh my goodness, there was so much sediment in the bottom of that hat.
Okay.
It was crazy. It looked like
The calcium citrate in particular, calcium and magnesium citrate, which help to bind to the oxalic acid and pull it out.
Correct.
Okay. So at what doses are you giving her?
You know what, I do not know what the, I don't have them in front of me, and I do not know what doses those are. I think that the calcium is 250, and I think the magnesium is 50, if I remember correctly.
50 is very low. I would make sure that you're getting as much calcium, magnesium as calcium, and I would go for at least 250, if not 500, with each meal.
Okay, so well, let me tell you this, because this might suffice. So I took her off of the Miralax. I'm so excited because I have actually found some things that are working, which I was so concerned about. I think she did go through a detox. Remember, anybody else that has any clients that are using the Miralax, she seemed to just, it was ugly. But I am giving her something called OxyPowder.
Magnesium
oxide is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving her 250 milligrams of chelated magnesium at lunchtime that has several different magnesiums in it,
okay,
as well as at bedtime We still are having to give her the Milk-O-Mag right now because other than that, she just can't. She doesn't have the muscle power to push.
Mm.
So she's getting a lot of magnesium throughout the day.
Have you tried the magnesium, the oxy powder at that time instead of the Milk-O-Mag?
I was doing the oxy powder in the morning.
If you can try to get her off the milk, right? The oxy powder, everybody that I've known that raves about that takes it at bedtime, and then they have an easy bowel movement in the morning.
Okay.
So you might just try.
I'll try morning and night then.
Yeah, try morning and night. Yeah, so given all that magnesium, you are giving her a lot of magnesium. But the point of it is how much of it is being absorbed and how much of it is binding to the oxalates and being removed that way. So
okay,
I think you just have to play with doses.
I was just concerned about giving her too much magnesium at this point because I'm giving her a lot.
Yeah, but, you know, bowel tolerance is what you go for with magnesium.
Well, and we ain't there yet, sister.
Ain't there yet, then keep going. I've had people go up to 16 or more hundred to get that response.
How much?
I've had people do 1,600 to 2,000 of magnesium, and, you know, they're just barely getting the bowel tolerance. So it just depends on, you know, how much of a buildup and how much of a deficiency has happened over the years.
Well, right, and that could be, you know, significant, especially due to the fact that with the, you know, with the Miralax, it was pretty much like her having diarrhea every day, which we are not doing that now, and she is actually having a bowel movement. A decent-sized bowel movement every other day is what she's doing right now.
Great. I mean, that's a huge improvement. It's a huge improvement.
I think that's a huge improvement. I was super excited about that.
Super, super great. Absolutely. Absolutely. Looking at some of this other stuff, do you have her on like a ketogenic type diet? It looks like from these numbers that you do.
You know, I really don't have her on a ketogenic diet. I just have her on a diet that is more, you know, we use oils just because she doesn't chew well. Like we'll use MCT oil on her food because she doesn't chew well. We want things to be well lubricated. So maybe that's putting her into ketogenesis, but she also
doesn't
have a gallbladder.
Well, it could be. She's on low carb intake.
No. I mean, I give her lots of vegetables and a little bit of protein is what we try to do.
Okay, so vegetables and protein, that's a low-carb diet. That's not if you're having her on grains and stuff, because I was going to say there's so much evidence for getting somebody into ketosis. It is good to have somebody monitoring it for seizure control. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that research.
Yeah. So maybe I should talk to the neuro people about helping me with that.
Uh-huh. Because, I mean, she does look like she's in a mild ketosis with these numbers.
Okay.
Which is fine.
I was concerned that she just wasn't absorbing the fat. Because she doesn't have a gallbladder.
Oh, she doesn't have a gallbladder. Yeah, that's a challenge. Boy, you've got a big challenge on your hands here. And she's, what, 18? 20? How old is she? 25. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And then,
I mean,
the thing is that she looks better now than she has in probably 4 years.
It's great. So you're obviously doing some really good stuff with her, and it just needs to be, you know, made a little bit just tweaked a little bit. Like B12 status is a little bit low. The methylmalonic acid is high, which means B12 status is low. The panathenic, let me look that one up. And the C is also low, so you could afford to give her more C, and that may help with the bowels.
And with the C, as long as I'm giving her a buffered C, I don't need to have to worry about oxalate.
Oh, that's a challenge, yeah. Her oxalates aren't that high. I would say, you know, you've got to go for the balance here. So if you're giving her plenty of magnesium and calcium that are, you know, the oxalates are pulling out, I would watch it if you can see, if you start to see a lot more sediment in there. But you, like I said earlier, there's no way to put this child on, or child, this grown adult, on a perfect diet. You know what I'm saying? Because there's so many considerations and you have to go with trade-offs. And I think there's so many problems with low vitamin C, right? That you've got to make sure that her levels are high. So you're going to have to try to find that balance.
Right. Well, I was going to try to see if I'm going to do the vitamin C tolerance test on myself first, and then I was going to try to do it on her as well. Because interestingly enough, since I did the insulin resistance program, you know, I'm poking everybody now, and looks like that she's not in true insulin resistance because she doesn't look too bad in the morning time, but I mean, she's definitely spiking real high at meals.
She's spiking at meals. Okay, so that would say to me, look at, it's a challenge, right? Insulin resistance and no gallbladder. You gotta figure out where you're gonna get this kid calories. Is she underweight, overweight, normal weight?
Yes, she's a little bit underweight right now.
But underweight, right?
And I'm having a hard time keeping weight on her.
Right, right. So MCT is a good choice because it doesn't require such gallbladder need. You can give her bile salts with her stuff, especially since she has, you only have to be careful going right into the G-tube, but you can give her bile salts with the fattier meal.
So what's your thought on Tudka?
I haven't used it, so I don't really. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Well, I mean, it is supposed to be a bile salt that helps with contracting the liver to keep the liver motile, and I thought that might be a good option due to the fact that we have to know that her liver is a mess from all the medications, number one.
Absolutely.
As we can see on this test, when you go a little further down, her glutathione is low.
Yep.
And I have her on 1,000 milligrams of NAC on an empty stomach every morning right now.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Myers cocktail that we did, she also did a glutathione push.
Okay. Have you tried liposomal glutathione? And liposomals for pretty much anything with her, given her gallbladder situation.
Liposomal, okay.
Yeah, I would try liposomal, but glutathione. Don't overdo it, just, you know, some normal levels, but that will help bring that up.
Even along with the NAC?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're trusting with the NAC that the body is going to pull it apart and reconstruct it properly. And if I don't know what her genetics are, she may have some glutathione S transferase or other enzymatic issues there that would make it more sluggish. So I just would feel more comfortable with liposomal glutathione than with the NAC. They may do it in
Do you feel like the next thing I should do with her then is some genetic testing so I can see where I'm going with all of that?
I think it would be helpful because given all her physical limitations and all biochemical limitations at this point, if you're not aware of some of those others, you may be pushing her into a situation like with oxalates. Yeah, her oxalate's a little bit high, but if she also has a genetic predisposition to it, to high oxalates, then you just really know you want to be super careful about it. Right, and the other thing.
Well, and I mean, could be.
Mm-hmm. It could be. What was yours like? Was yours high? What's yours?
Yep.
Yours
but
right.
I have a lot of yeast also.
Yeah, yours looks very similar to hers in terms of the glutathione. You don't have the same ketone problem and neurotransmitters. Yeah, yours aren't. Anywhere near. You have arabinose elevated, but not quite as high as hers, and that's about it on that page. But yeah, your oxalates are actually a little higher than hers.
That's because I'm drinking lots of green stuff.
Yeah.
Eating lots of green stuff.
Yeah, and here's the thing with oxalates, right? It gets a bad rap. Like, it's dangerous and damaging, and yeah, we don't want too much oxalates to pull out our nutrients, but sometimes when we do eat a lot of those nutrients, we get it in the system. But if we're not sensitive to it, to me, more it says when this gets into the urine, when oxalates get into the urine, it says more to me about the state of the gut, right? A leaky gut. If you have moderate amount of oxalate. You need not even have too much oxalate in the diet, but you have enough oxalate and you have enough calcium, magnesium to bind to them, and your gut is intact, you won't see it in the urine because it hasn't crossed the barrier and gotten into the bloodstream.
Okay, so that tells me then that she still definitely has a leaky gut.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, she'd have to with the levels of microbials that she has, that those things are, those toxins, the arabinose, the hydroxybenzoic, the hypuric, those are all going to damage the lining of the gut. And we don't also see, I don't know if you've ever tested her LPS, lipopolysaccharide, but if those are elevated in the blood, and then the creosol as well. So I think that looking at this, you need to be working on the antimicrobials you are, the biocidin. Is that the right one? I don't know. Are you rotating? Because rotating antimicrobials is super important, because otherwise you create a resistance to it.
Right. Well, they did tell me to do it. Well, but I don't agree with the way that this particular person told me how to do things anyway, because they told me to use the same antimicrobials for 30 days, and I know better because of what I'm learning with you guys. So they also did say, though, and there was a doctor. I went to the lab thing for Great Plains as well. So I went to the day thing, and there was a doctor there that was doing the biocidin for 14 days, and then he would cycle it. Then he would do it one day off two. So every 3 days he was doing the biocidin. So do you agree with that?
Well, there's a lot of ways to rotate. So I agree with the concept of rotating, right? And then with the biocidin, doing it for 2 weeks, unlikely in just 2 weeks to be able to start to get the resistance. Although if there's components in there that you had her on before, like I don't remember the exact ingredients, but say it's golden seal is in there, and you've had her on golden seal before, she may have already developed some kind of sensitivity to it or resistance to it. So I oftentimes will look and say, okay, I'm going to do this antimicrobial for this many days, this one for this many days, this one for this many days. Biocidin is a composite, so it's got a lot of stuff into it. I'll oftentimes do individual ones and do it based on the stool test. But given that her stool test showed negative and this showed that she had some of the other stuff in there, some rotation plan would work better than just 30 days straight. My concern is that on the days that you're like one day on, two days off, is that you're not getting any protection and things can start to build back. So I would be looking at something else for those days.
Right. Yeah, that was my plan, was to do something else during those days for sure.
Yeah.
And then after that, he wanted me to treat the C. diff first and then go after the yeast. That was his plan.
Okay. And what did he recommend for the C. diff? Is that the biocidin?
The biocidin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I hate putting all my eggs in one basket. You know what I mean? Like trusting that the biocidin is going to be the one.
So, and what would you recommend to do for would you recommend then to do the Culturelle or no? What was your thoughts after you looked that up?
Well, I personally don't like the formula because it's got crap in it. But I do like the idea of the Lactobacillus rhabdomyosis. And if you found another company, like Lynn said, she found one. And then I also think that Custom Probiotics probably has an L-rhabdomyosis, which is Lactobacillus CC, GG, is what's the rhabdomyosis. Let me just look that one up.
Yeah, I looked at them too, so maybe I should just go with them.
It's a Greek company. They're very concentrated. Unfortunately, they only sell them in large containers. But let me see.
But I'm going to need a large container, correct?
You are, right. And so if people think, oh, my God, it's $100, like, you know how much probiotic you're going to get out of that compared to, like, your typical $30 bottles? It's, like, crazy. Acidophilus, multi-strain, custom probiotics, lactic acid-free. They have a lactic – let me see what's in there lactate-free, because if it's got a decent amount of rhabdomyosis, it might be okay. Formula, here we go. Let's see. Yeah. Yeah, so the rhamnosus is the high, is the highest one in here. It doesn't say how much of each, but it is the first one. This is their D-lactic acid-free one is rhamnosus, salivarius, and lactis. So rhamnosus and salivarius are the lactose, and then it has four strains of bifido, lactis, bifidum, infantis, and longum. So it doesn't say how much of each, but it is pretty high potency. Let me see if they have the individual rhamnosus. That might be a good way to go to. Let me see, go back here. So you may want to look that up.
I did find one. I put the link in the chat.
You did? From custom or from somebody else?
Custom.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so I like what they do, and they're pure. It's just pure powders. I just don't like the ones that are loaded with crap. And the Culturelle, quite frankly, not impressed.
Okay.
I'm just not impressed with the ingredients.
And then if I do it, I mean, I bought my little yogurt maker, and if I can make something, some kind of a kefir with the probiotics, I'm even going to be doing a much better job, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. So you can give her, I would give it to her to start, the probiotic itself, but you can get the medium to increase it, so then just have that as food as well. So if you start with 100 billion organisms and you put that into a culture, you know, whether it's a kefir or a yogurt or whatever, and you allow it to grow, you're going to get a whole lot more, so you get more bang for your buck, assuming she tolerates it. You just do have to be careful with the fat because of her fat situation. But if she's not, well, it's hard for you to know whether she's experiencing it. But if she's experiencing, you notice, you look at her face, you see that she's more in distress. She makes noises. She doubles over. That movement in her gut increases. Then you know that you probably aggravated stuff and you need to back off.
Well, after we took her off the Miralax, her stomach has gone down a lot. She still has some of that weird movement in her stomach, but it's not like it was.
Beautiful, beautiful. So just go slowly with her. Just use everything in small amounts and gradually build up and watch. And watch and notice how much the seizures are happening. Notice her gut. Notice her bowel movements. And just move slowly. All right?
So what about the markers for the neurological markers that are on here as well? I mean, anything that you can tell me about any of that? Are there any major secrets that might even touch upon the fact that if we change something, we might change seizure patterns?
Well, her neurotransmitter numbers are not terrible at all. I mean, I'd mostly be concerned if her quinolinic or chirionic were high. Because those are metabolic toxins. The hydroxyacetate, the HIA, is decent. It's a little bit on the low side for serotonin. But there's nothing that's outstanding here that's saying to me, you know, that it's worth right now going in and messing with. You know, certainly serotonin, dopamine, if they're low, can affect gut motility. But I don't see anything specific here that is so bad that I would jump in with. The quinolinic, like I said, usually if you see that high quinolinic and chirionic, then I'm concerned about the serotonin levels being too low.
Okay.
Norepinephrine,
well,
is a little bit on the lower side compared to homovenelic, which makes the ratio high. Norepinephrine, epinephrine, those are our sympathetic nervous system neurotransmitters. Could make her that, but it's low versus high. I'd be more concerned with that being high in a seizure situation.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you've got a lot to mess with right now, and that's not the one. I think the B vitamins, B12 for sure, because it's on the methylmalonic acids on the low side. Certainly niacin and thiamine because of the Krebs cycle stuff. So I'd focus on the Bs. I'd focus on the gut bugs. And the.
If I could get my doctor to cooperate with giving her B12 injections, you think that would be helpful?
Yeah, it could be because of her gut stuff. I mean, you could certainly give her a sublingual B12 or patch B12 or liposomal B12. I'd get liposomal. I mean, it's expensive. If you're going to get if you're going to have to pay out of pocket for that, maybe doing it once or twice to start could be helpful. But then I would
The Myers cocktail is out of my pocket, but like if I went to my regular doctor, you know, she has insurance that'll pay for certain things. If I could get him to cooperate with doing a B12 shot.
Yeah, and just be careful. You just want to be careful because not knowing her genetics, you don't know if you're going to have high dose, which it would be high dose in a shot. You want to make sure that it's not going to throw her out of balance and cause some anxiety, and you don't want anything that's going to cause brain irritability. And that would be that'd be my only concern. Typically, I would rather see you get a liposomal, start with one drop, start with two drops, watch the seizure activity, watch her level of agitation, watch her level of anxiety, body language-wise, and then just move slowly. If you get to that point, I'm feeling like no on the B12 injections.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll target the next thing to do is genetic stuff, so that way that'll give us a few more answers of what we feel like we can do safely.
And I would say do these things and retest this in 3 months just to see where it's going.
Retest in 3 months?
Yeah. No later than 3 months, because you want to see if you're making the right changes in the right direction.
Okay.
So looking at the bile salts, that herb you mentioned is fine. Looking at the B12, but getting liposomal tiny amounts, working it up slowly. Looking at the overall B, if you can get a liquid B complex. I know Premier Research has a liquid B complex that's pretty well-rounded, not too high in everything, but well-rounded. That might be a good Krebs cycle support. You're already doing the magnesium, calcium. We talked about ways to emphasize that. And then the glutathione, the liposomal glutathione.
Okay, I'll get to work.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was a complicated case, guys. You know, I don't think many of you are going to see cases quite that complicated. Fortunately, Cynthia has her hand up. Hi, Cynthia. Cynthia? You might be muted, so just unmute yourself on your end.
You can't hear me, can you?
Now I can.
You can? My thing still says I'm muted, so that's really good to know.
There's two of you, Cynthia. Three of you. There's three of you in there. Two of them are muted and one of them's not. Can I drop them? Are they, is that just prior call-ins, so I can drop them, right?
Yeah, but...
Oops. I dropped all of her. Darn it. Post in the chat to tell Cynthia to call back in. Darn it. I was afraid of that, but I thought, oh, it's on a separate line. It'll just drop one, but it showed up three times. I'm so sorry. Tell Cynthia to call back in. Darn it. Okay, let me look to see if there's any other questions. If you have a question, type *2 on your telephone keypad, and that'll bring you in. And, okay, and I'll look
at you. We've actually been having some conversation about flax seeds and the need to soak. I make sure I soak my flax seeds. I actually, if I grind them, I grind them and then soak them, but so I thought I would share that with you that we're having this conversation.
Yeah, I'll comment on that because I would say you've got the order wrong. You want to soak them and then grind them because when you grind them, you kill them.
Yeah.
So soaking them after you grind them is not going to germinate them. So what you want to do is soak them first, and then if you want to make it, you know, like a ground flax cracker or something, I don't like the whole flax seed, so I'll then take the mush that I get, you know, the gel that I get with the flax, and I put those in the blender. I don't necessarily blend them until they're completely smooth, but I pulse them to get a nice texture, and then you can use it as a porridge, you can use it as a pudding, you can use it as a binder, you can use it to make crackers. But I would do it the other way. Once you grind them, then the soaking doesn't really do much good.
Well, it was more because Then I like to keep them on hand if they're ground, but I haven't ever tried dehydrating them after I've soaked it and then ground them. So it's more of a convenience factor in my part.
Yeah, but if you pre-grind flax seeds, you're killing a lot of it, right? So
I realize that you're opening it up. It's again more of a convenience factor. So it's not like I do it with the whole thing, but
I would say you're probably better off doing it this way, just soaking some up and keeping it in a jar in your fridge. And then using whatever you're going to in 4 days or whatever that you're going to use. And you can throw them in smoothies. You can do whatever you want with them. What are you doing with the ground flax? Are you just putting it on things or what are you doing with
it? Yeah. I just sprinkle it on a salad or something.
Yeah. But, I don't think you have to soak it out. I think soaking it after grinding it is not going to give you any benefit. Okay. I would rather see you soak them first or just fresh grind them if you're going to use them. But
after, if you fresh grind them, do they, because my concern is constipation and that whole
thing. Yeah, you'd have to drink a lot of liquid with it, yeah.
Right.
But if the fresh grinding is not that, I would say, it's just not worth it for the convenience. So you basically, then you put it on your salad when it's already, it's mushy?
I mix it in with some of the dressing that I make.
Okay. Yeah, so here's what you could do instead. I would soak them, keep the gel in your fridge. When you're going to make a dressing, just take a tablespoon of the soaked, throw it in the blender, and then use it that way.
Okay.
Or soak them, and then if you want to then grind them all at one time, have this, mush that's already in there, and then you can just take the spoonful of it and put it on your salad. You'll get a lot more benefit out of it that way.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And Ling had asked if you add them to your Vitamix blender or what. I actually, because I just do a small amount at a time, I use my little coffee grinder, nut grinder thing.
That's when they're dry. You can't do that once they're soaked. You'll kill your coffee grinder. You need to put it in a blender. So if they're whole and they're hard, then you can do it that way. The other option is to soak them and get a gel. And then put that gel in the dehydrator. Dehydrate the gel and then grind up what's resulted from that, right? So then grind up the cracker that's resulted from it. And now you have this dry that you can keep forever pretty much a long time because it's already been, the fats have not been oxidized. So that's another option. They sell those. There was a company that used to sell sprouted flax seeds. Dried
seeds.
And that's probably how they did it. It was a meal, flaxseed meal. So my guess was that they soaked the seeds and then dehydrated it out and then took the resulting, cracker or whatever, and ground that down, broke it up into pieces, put it in the blender and dry, ground it up, and then put it in a jar. So you could do it that way, too.
All right. There's more questions, but it looks like Cynthia's on.
Okay, where's Cynthia? Oh, now she's on twice again. I'm going to open both of them. Sorry about that. Okay. Oh, let's try the other one. Are there three of you? No, wait. Okay, there's two of you. And I'm not going to get rid of one because of what happened last time. I'm going to try opening one and say hi, Cynthia. Oops, I'm not hearing her yet. Wait. Now it's not opening. There it goes. Okay. Say hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Cynthia.
Oh, good. Now you're there just once. Yay. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to get rid of you.
Did you hear anything of what I was saying?
No.
Okay. You must have immediately disconnected me. Okay. I'm researching a case that my vet has. She's about 42. She gets dry heaves whenever there's any animal urine or stool within her scent range. And I looked up some stuff on multiple chemical sensitivities.
Mm-hmm.
She does have reaction to perfume. It started as a teenager when she was so desperate to keep up with her big sister in bless her heart, she still persevered and became a vet. But she gets these dry heaves and a gag reflex. And I'm just trying to bring her into the light on, you know, root cause and functional and all that good stuff. And I wonder if you have any inspirations on where I might look. She says her liver enzymes are good. She doesn't identify with having histamine reactions. She did not mention, you know, reactivity to chemical products, you know, like bleach or anything they would use in the vet clinic. Mm-hmm. She says her digestion is good. And Stop there.
Never believe anybody who says my digestion is good. You got to dig, right? What does that mean? How many bowel movements does she have a day? What are the bowel movements like? Are they soft? Does she have any difficulty with passing? Does she have any burping, gas, bloating? Does she have any, you know, skin stuff? Because leaky gut can manifest, even if she doesn't have even the overt gut symptoms, leaky gut can manifest in allergies and hyperreactivity. So never trust anybody who says my digestion is good. You got to ask them lots of questions. So you might take the digestion assessment that we have in the digestive module or even in the whole history module that we have for NEPT and give her that questionnaire to see, because it includes questions about leaky gut and candida overgrowth, et cetera. So that's where I would caution everybody to stop there when somebody says, yeah, my digestion's good. Yeah, I have a bowel movement every 3 or 4 days, and, you know, that's what my doctor said is good, et cetera. Now, I'm not saying that that's her case, but I'm just saying I would dig deeper with the digestive thing, because the digestion and hyperreactivity are very, very linked. And the liver as well. Liver enzymes elevated is the end stage of liver problem, right? Early on, it's like, how were her liver enzymes in the optimal, are they in the optimal range? But more than that, there's other issues, like how does she handle fat? Does she avoid, sometimes people say my digestion's fine, but they avoid fat because they can't digest it, so they naturally avoid it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I would look at all that kind of stuff. I would look at, you know, does she eat gluten? Is she on other potential allergens? You know, things that we know of are high on the suspect list: gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, peanuts, right? How much sugar does she eat? Like, really take it down to those foundations. Because a lot of times it's very common for us to try to chase symptoms, right? So her symptom is she reacts, she gets dry heaves from the scent of, you know, animal urine or feces, which is really a challenge if you're a vet, by the way. It's not a challenge for the average person who can keep themselves separated from it, but as a vet, that's a very high problem. So I would be looking at, I would definitely be looking at her gut, but liver, let's see, oh yeah, so other allergens in her system, right? Because I look at allergies as a bucket, or allergies and hypersensitivities, because I wouldn't want to necessarily name this an allergy, but I'd look at how full is her bucket, right? Yeah. Is her bucket full? Does she eating a lot of these potential problem foods? Is she eating, you know, non-organic foods? Is she eating foods with the high glycemic index, refined food, processed food? So I'd look at really all the things you know about to ask questions about the details of it. Doesn't sound like a histamine reaction. I mean, histamine reactions usually result in more of that redness, swelling, itching kind of thing. The heaves, I'd be looking at her gut, like how does she digest protein? Does she have good gut flora? Does she ever get reflux? Those kinds of things. If you're looking for an immediate, like try to give her some symptom relief, right, while looking for her root cause, I would look at supporting her liver, because when you think about it, it's being the urine and the feces, you want to ask, well, is it the smell of it that causes her to, you know, be completely over the top, or is it there's some chemical in there, right? Because urine and stool have toxins in them, right, that are being released by the animal.
Yeah. Well, she can walk into the clinic and across the large clinic, if the cat has peed, she she reacts. So it's not right. just, you know, the idea of it, right?
Right. There's something chemically in there that's bothering her. So what is it? Is it urea? Well, stool probably doesn't have too much urea in it. So what else is there? Like, is it particular things that animals put out? Is it just animals, or is it, does she have that reaction to her own urine or to, you know, her kids' urine or changing diapers if she has children?
Yeah. That's great. And I know all those things to do. I wasn't making the connection of the hyperreactivity to the gut. And, you know, I wondered about vagal response because of the heaving and the gagging.
You're right. So if she's got a low parasympathetic tone, a high sympathetic tone, right, that could cause that. Very good connection there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Stressed out to the max, right? And she's got high levels of cortisol, low levels of acetylcholine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, looking specifically at nutrients, right? I mean, she might try like those patches, you know, because it's kind of like nausea. It might be related, you know, the little beads that they put, the acupuncture beads, pellets that they put on the wrist.
Yeah, you know, I first met her when she was doing acupuncture on my dog.
Oh. Well, you might ask her about PC5, pericardium 5, and to see if something along the lines of, you know, nausea, anti-nausea treatment in an acupuncture kind of an approach could be helpful for her symptomatically. Then maybe she just wears some of those bracelets they sell to pregnant women when they have morning sickness. That's a possibility. Ginger, right? Ginger tea. Ginger even capsules or ginger tincture, carrying around a ginger tincture to see if that helps. I'd look at vitamin B6 deficiency because that contributes to nausea. I'm just thinking in terms of, like, you know, this isn't nausea, but it is a stomachy type of reaction, and maybe the similar things would help from the symptoms.
I would say that peppermint, you know, the menthols, peppermint in particular is appealing to her. I didn't ask her if that was helpful for symptom alleviation.
Yeah. So those are things to look at. Okay.
Yeah, this is the vet. I'm working up the functional canine ranges in blood chemistry.
Oh, cool.
And she's been cooperative. I mean, she made copies of her old Merck manual and sent them to me, which I thought was really nice of her.
Nice.
So I told her one way or another I was going to learn blood chemistry, and understanding what's going on in my dog was going to help me get there.
Good for you.
So,
repetition.
Yeah.
Just years and years and years and years.
Sorry, Marie. But are you cool if I modify your human master health tracker blood thing for dogs?
So if you modify that, well, I would be cool if you just started distributing it to folks, right? Because we've put a lot of time and money into creating the formulas and all that, but you can certainly do that.
For in-house, for our community, and then if I would share with her, I would do a screenshot like you.
Yeah, you could do that, or you could do a PDF of it. I just wouldn't want you to share the actual Excel doc, because that's
no
proprietary. Yeah.
Yes. I appreciate that very much. And
but you can create a PDF from it once you put create a new tab in it. That's animal, you know, dog ranges or whatever.
Yeah. What did you say just before that?
You could create a new tab in the spreadsheet that says dog ranges, right? And then you just copy it and then make the edits to it. And the formulas should work because it's set up so that if you change the ranges, it'll change the way it works. You see what I'm saying? So if the range is like 10 to 25 for an adult human, but you put in 3 to 10, then the green, yellow, red kind of things will change as well, that formulation, right? But yeah, no problem if you were to take that chart, make that, and then take that and make a PDF out of it. That's fine. I just don't want the Excel thing to be shared.
Yeah. No, no, I understand. That's what I wanted to just clarify. Well, my issue is I'm getting very anal or very geeky about this because I want to compare the dog ranges to human ranges.
Mm.
And I want to look at how they have evolved in the veterinary world since my oldest date is 1986, which is the only milk manual they had.
Okay.
So I'm getting a little bit
get geeky and see if we can get these pets optimized, because there's still, even in the holistic vet community, there's still a lot of Western type practices that sneak in. And it'd be nice if there were more, if they had just more of a functional approach.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to help her realize about leaky gut, I guess, now, and, you know, digestive and the liver. Your point about liver enzymes, that's a great reminder. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Yeah. So
good.
She gave me your personal email, so I'm making progress.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. It's just sad for a vet to have this issue, because it wouldn't be crippling to me in my life if that happened. I'd just make sure that the kids and the husbands took care of the dog urine and, you know, picked it up out of the garden or whatever when they poop. But for a vet, holy cow.
I know. She must have been really committed to her studies. I do have a question on blood. Just in general, why would blood differ from species to species?
Why would it differ? What do you mean? It's a different physiological organism, and we have different biochemistry and needs. I mean,
Well, so, like, it's looking like some of the dog stuff is somewhat close to us, which they do a lot of experiments on dogs, right, or they used to. But the ranges are varying, like, with a bunny rabbit or a guinea pig, just looking at how those ranges differ.
Yeah, because they're all species. We're all different species. It varies from adult to child in humans, right? It varies from males to females on some of the parameters.
Yeah.
So I think it's just the specific biochemical individuality of the species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes. Yeah, that makes sense. But, okay.
It'd be easier if it was all the same, wouldn't it? Like, it's just, there's one range and that's it. We don't have to worry about it.
Well, it would be. And then how am I got to figure out how I explain how the ranges in the dog world have changed over time. I mean, it can't just be because our world is getting sicker and the pet population is getting sicker. I mean, I have to account for changes in our thinking, right?
Exactly. I was going to say changes in our thinking and understanding of what really is optimal. Like if you look at the conventional lab ranges, like for, let's just take liver enzyme AST or ALT or something like that, they'll say it's good from, you know, 10 to or even 0 to 50. And I'm just making that up. It might not be quite that high. But we're saying what ideal is between 10 and 25. And actually, we understand that used to be like if it was too low, nobody cared, you know, right? But now as functional practitioners, we know that if your liver enzymes are too low, it could suggest a deficiency in the nutrient that's used to generate that enzyme. So, like, for example, you know, AST, ALT, if the B6 is low, you may see a lower than 10 number on that. But we see that what we've made, the mistake we've made over the years is to wait, give the range so that we wait until somebody's really sick and pathological and needs a transplant or something before they're considered abnormal. But now we know better, right? And functionally, but Western medicine is still not quite caught on. I mean, they're still running around with a thyroid range of, I think they've lowered it now to, I think it's like 0.5 to 4.5 instead of 5.5, right? But we know from a functional perspective, we want it to be in a much narrower range to be ideally healthy. So I think it's the same in the pet world as well.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
It's just a fun project, and I appreciate your input on my vet.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. I don't see any other hands up. Star 2 raises your hand if you have a question. And if you're new to our INE office hours, welcome. Those of you who are new to IRSPT. This is kind of a bonus call for you guys, because next month is when we will have started the program, and that's when your 5 months of access starts. So, but welcome anyway. And some of you came from CMDS into IRSPT, and that's great. Let's see. Woo. I'm looking through the chat to see if there's anything in there. Huey says hi from Canada. Ah, you came in as hi from Canada.
I put all the questions that I thought were appropriate into the Q&A.
Oh, good. Thank you. All right. Let me refresh that. Okay, good. Tom, what is your approach to doing detox at the cellular level? You know, here's the thing, my feeling about detox is detox starts with what I call everyday detox. So you have to look at reducing the toxic load is step one. So in any kind of detox, step one is always reducing the toxic load, is looking at what are we exposed to that we can control, right? If you live in I don't know, Los Angeles, and there's a lot of pollution in the air, then you can't really reduce that other than to, you know, watching your indoor air and use filters and things like that. So we want to reduce the toxic load. And then at the cellular level, you're basically, it's good oxygenation. So what? Exercise to keep things moving, right? Good breathing techniques, deep abdominal breathing versus shallow breathing to expel toxins through the lungs, right? Using sweating, right? Exercise to sweat. Saunas are great as well. In fact, I just ordered myself a new sauna yesterday that I had seen at a show, and I was really impressed with it, and I'll tell you guys more about it as time goes on. I should be getting it in about a month. You know, those kinds of things. They don't need to have a sauna, but how else can they sweat? Hot baths and things like that. But then nutrition, right? At a cellular level, you want to be well nourished. So you're really looking at all the nutrients. Looking at the gut, healing the gut, getting the blood sugar balanced. So all of those are part of detoxing at a cellular level to make sure the detox mechanisms are working efficiently and effectively, and then to make sure that the toxic load is low. And then beyond that, you know, you can look at specific liver cleanses and kidney cleanses, but that's a good question, and that's where it starts, the foundations. Ling says, I wanted to ask about a nodule at the bottom of my neck along with a red rash. Could that be from diet or stress? I mean, certainly any imbalance in the body, you know, diet or stress certainly can play out, and the skin is a detox organism. So rash, I want to know what the nodule is and where that nodule is. Is it along a lymph node? Is it along the muscle called the sternocleidomastoid that goes from behind the ear down onto the clavicle? Along the front and back of that are all the lymph channels. So is it a lymph node that's swollen? How big is it? So there's a lot of questions I would ask. Certainly it could be related to, but with a swollen lymph node, are there other swollen lymph nodes other places, right? So lots of questions about that. And sometimes we get swollen calcified lymph nodes. Like if you had I had a lot of throat stuff going on when I was a kid, and I actually had my tonsils removed when I was 5. And I have a couple of basically calcified lymph nodes. They're not painful. They're very mobile, so they're not going to be, you know, like a cancerous thing. They've been there for decades. But they got so often were swollen when I was a kid that they calcified. And I still have I have one or two of those there. So it could be something like that. But if it's tender to touch, does it move? Like, if you put it between your fingers, can you move it around? Those are a lot of the questions you'd want to ask about that. Ling says a client has constipation after doing green smoothies, but she said if she eats carbs like rice, then she goes regular. Why is that? Thought greens gave you fiber and made you more regular. Yeah, so usually what I think of when somebody says that they get constipated from eating more greens, then I'm thinking that there's a stomach acid problem and there's not producing enough stomach acid. So Cynthia says, are folks using flax seeds, whole seeds soaked overnight as a bowel relaxer? I mean, you certainly can, and it's going to vary from person to person as to how they work, but soaked overnight with flax can certainly be used. I would then, instead of drinking it like that or eating it whole, I would tend to want to just pulse up the seeds so that they're going to be absorbed better. Tom said, can you talk to us about cooking vegetables without oil? How much oil, like virgin olive oil, coconut oil, is detrimental to the lining of the gut and blood vessels, epithelial cells? Yeah. So I'm not a big fan of oil just because, just like flour, it's a partial food. It's not a whole food. But cooking vegetables, going starting with that, without oil, you just basically can put some veggies in. You can either steam them, obviously, and then add a sauce later for flavor. But you can put them in a frying pan with some water and some garlic and onions or other seasonings and just do it like that. You'd have to keep stirring it, you know, to make sure it doesn't stick, and make sure there's enough of it, but it's like a broth kind of a simmer that you would do. And then if you wanted to do oil, I'd rather see you do oil after you cooked it and put a drizzle on there. How much can be detrimental? I think it depends on the person. I don't know that there's any set amount, but I just like to keep it down to a minimum. I know lots of people that just drool everything. They just put everything into tons of oil. Virgin olive oil and coconut oil certainly are going to be better than using safflower oil and sunflower oil and other things like that. Okay, let's see. Oh, a whole bunch more. Let's see. Marcy, at what point does a person become hypoglycemic? I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that, but if you mean by what number do they become hypoglycemic, I think it all depends on how they feel. I mean, I had, my blood sugar was 33 when I was fasting and my ketones were high and I felt great. Is that hypoglycemic? No, it wasn't for me at that particular point in time. But if a blood sugar goes below a certain level and then the person starts to feel like, you know, palpitations and irritable and cranky and like, you know, they're going to pass out, then that would be considered hypoglycemic. Now, in some cases, when we take somebody who has super high hyperglycemia and they've had diabetes and insulin resistance for a long time and they're used to their fasting blood sugars and their day-to-day blood sugars being like higher, like 150, 200, and then you get them into quote-unquote normal range, they start to feel hypoglycemic because it's such a dramatic shift. So I think there's no set number. It's just based on where the number is and how they feel. Tom says, I go for fresh veggies. Absolutely the best. Tell me more about hydrating. You mean hydrating foods or you mean dehydrating foods? Because if you mean about dehydrating foods, a lot of times I'll have people dehydrate, you know, make crackers because they're used to eating crappy crackers, right? They're used to eating stuff that's, you know, glutinous and filled with all kinds of other stuff. And they getting used to that as they go on a better diet, they want that crunch. So I make crackers with veggies, fresh veggies, ground up with some nuts and seeds or flax or chia to hold them together, and then dehydrate them into crackers. So if that's what you mean, then that's what it is. But ideally, you eat fresh veggies. When I travel, I carry crackers and stuff like that because it's hard to get when I'm at the airport or, you know, out of town somewhere. I may not be able to get such fresh veggies. Or if I go out to dinner with people and it's like, whoa, there's hardly any veggies available here, then I won't eat the food that they serve and I'll eat my crackers instead. But no, it's a substitute. It's not the best, but it's absolutely a great transition food for folks. Yeah, Tom, I think the cellular detox question I answered, you're asking specifically about foods, herbs, and supplements, and that could be a whole class in and of itself, and we do that in our nutritional endocrinology practitioner training. We have a whole module, which is several hours long, that goes into that. So it's a little bit beyond the scope of this. Laura wants to know how to organize IRS, PT, and sweet spot concurrently or one after the other. Also, I haven't finished the MDS, but have done another digestion program, was thinking I should do this with everyone else. Sure. Yeah, so the way I usually recommend doing IRS, PT, and sweet spot is to do them concurrently. So if you start with going into IRSPT, it'll go through the first module and they say, oh, they check this module out in Sweet Spot. And then you go and do that. You can do them in the other order. You can go into the module in IRSPT, find the corresponding in Sweet Spot, do that, and then come back and then understand the finer points about doing it. So I kind of like to do them side by side, and that's how we've structured it. A pea-sized nodule, this is Ling, along this line behind the ear, between the ear and the clavicle, it moves. It's probably a swollen lymph node. You can try lymphatic massage. You can look to see, is there an infection in the throat? Is there an infection in the ear or something that the body's fighting off? If it's been persisting for a long time, it's going to make a difference between that and whether it's just like it's just popped up recently. It could be an acute situation that's happening. It moves is great because if it's something that's fixed, it's more suspicious. Like you want to make sure it's not a cancerous kind of a thing. Ling says, should they take HCL for the constipation? Not necessarily. So what other things can we do to stimulate the HCL, right? We have a whole module on that in CMDS. So bitters are great, helping them with their zinc status to help that. I'm not a big fan of jumping right in and doing HCL because you have to be super careful with it. So I get the general aspects, but want to understand more about what stimulates our cells to purge toxins and or restore their proper cell functioning. Again, you know, high antioxidant type foods and nutrients, but it goes back further than that, right? If we've got to make sure that we're not like adding fuel to the fire as we try to put the fire out, right? So good antioxidant support, vitamin C. And for liver function, you've got dandelion and milk thistle and hawthorn berry. So like I said, it's a whole lecture in and of itself that is not a quick answer. Yeah. A dehydrating method sounds great. Yeah, great. Ling says, do you make all your foods or do you sometimes purchase things like jerky or other foods when you travel? When I travel, I look for a good health food store, and there are like prepared, like, crackers, I will do dehydrated vegetable crackers like I explained to Tom what I make. I'll buy vegetable juices. I will buy, you know, good, solid, organic foods that are good for me. Otherwise, I take them with me. Yeah. Good. Good. All right. So we are at the end of our time here together. We had a lot of great questions. Let me just double check. Nope, I don't see any other hands. So I really appreciate your great questions and your interaction, and I look forward to getting to know you more as you dig in. I can't wait to dig in with the insulin resistance. For those of you in IRSPT and NEPT, you're welcome to join us for the call next week. I think it's Wednesday the 28th, and we'll have our kickoff call, so you'll get a really good sense of how the program's structured, if you haven't already, et cetera. Lynn has her line open, so did you have something more you wanted to add?
Well, Cynthia said, do you have an algae oil that you are evaluating for its omega-3 benefits?
Yes, and I can't find my darn bottle. I had it in my backpack when I came home from my trip, and I haven't had any time to really go through, but it was a really cool one. That didn't have soybean oil in it. It didn't have any other preservatives. So I'll let you know as soon as I can find it. I did look the other day in my backpack, and I couldn't find it. So it's got to be around here somewhere. It better be because it was expensive. It was like $25.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was
cool.
And Tom says detox. Thanks for the good comments. Lots of webinars on this topic, but too many different approaches to this topic.
Yeah, there are a lot of approaches, and you know those in our NEPT program know we have a whole structure on it. We are going to be doing in June. We'll be doing our green cleanse again. But there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of herbs and there's a lot of nutrients, but it all goes down to don't try to fix a problem with an herb or a nutrient. Try to fix the underlying. So identifying nutrient deficiencies. So there's a lot to talk about with that. And you know, my goal is to always reduce the toxic load first and then add these extra really cool herbs and nutrients. But green leafy vegetables, just simple green leafy vegetables, are phenomenal for cleansing on a cellular level. Lots of high water content stuff. All righty. So thank you all for being here.
I just want to add, sometimes we feel the need to detox or like scrub ourselves clean as if we're bad. And so I propose that instead of detoxing, you nurture and love yourself. So instead of doing this liver detox, do love your liver and just love on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. We tend to be in this agitation mode and this fear mode. A lot of us are living in this fear mode of am I doing the right thing, and what, you know, you just need to relax into it and allow our bodies to do the wonderful, precious job of what they do best. And detox is built in. Yeah, we can overload the circuitry, right? And we need to lower that down. And that's why we do detox programs and add extra herbs to help us and support us. But honestly, my cleanse, my most popular 7-day detox is actually just a whole foods cleanse. It's not, you know, all the other stuff is optional. And it's a big part of it is doing heart math and breathing. Breathing is so amazing for detox. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Bye.